from up in New Jersey. Tell me about your family life, tell me about your family and where you grew up.
Okay, you're right there, Thomas. My boy, I was born July 27th in 1932 in Hoboken, New Jersey, and moved up to Jersey City when I was about 6 years old. My lovely wife, Barbara, and I have been married since 1955. We'll be celebrating our 38th anniversary October 6th of this year. I also have two wonderful daughters, Rebecca and Laura Jean.
Okay, how many brothers and sisters did you have?
In my family, I had seven, which I was the youngest. I had four sisters and two other brothers. I would make the seventh one.
Okay, and you grew up in Jersey City. What high school did you go to?
Yeah, grew up in Jersey City. Lived in Jersey City about 18 years. Went to a high school called Dickinson High School in Jersey City.
Okay. When did you start playing ball, and how did you get started?
Okay, when I was in Jersey City, I was playing baseball with a milkman by the name of Howard Wimpy, who formed the team, and I played before even attending high school. It was like a semi-pro team. We would go around playing the different area ball clubs, and then most of my baseball was then played when I went into high school at Dickinson High School and played the 4 years on the baseball team.
I see. Were you a pitcher always?
I was an outfield and a pitcher. Mainly when I didn't pitch, I did play the outfield.
Okay.
Did you saw me hitting in the last years of my life, you know I should have stuck to pitching.
Okay. You enjoyed pitching and all that early on? Did you feel like you wanted to pitch?
No, I always wanted to pitch.
Yeah.
When I went to high school and I switched from being an outfielder into pitching, I enjoyed pitching, and Howard Wimpy gave me some good instructions, and it worked out fine.
Okay. I understand you were a sinker baller.
Right.
Can you tell me when you learned to throw the sinker ball?
I'd be glad to do that. In terms of the main pitch that I did have was a sinker. And basically, I didn't really try to throw it any special way. It was just like when a guy throws a fastball, it automatically started to sink, and it always sank. It was just a natural pitch to throw, not doing anything to the ball. Some guys today, they have to turn the ball over a little bit to make it sink. Mine was just basically natural.
You had a natural sinker almost then?
Yes.
Okay, after high school, what happened after high school?
I graduated from high school. I signed with the New York Yankees.
Who signed you? Who's the scout that signed you, Chuck?
Yeah, a guy by the name... You got me on that one, and I can't think of his name right now. I will go through on the conversation that we're having to remember his name.
All right.
He signed me out of high school in 1952, and I went down to the Yankee Farm Club in Norfolk.
Right.
And Norfolk was a Class B Piedmont league at that particular time.
Right.
Stayed there that 1 year and had a record of about 18-9.
Okay.
Had a manager by the name of Mayo Smith, who later on in life became a manager for the Detroit Tigers.
Right. Who were some of the other players on your team? Can we call?
There was some players on the team, but I don't think you're going to know the names. Charlie LeBrun was a pitcher. Buddy Carter was a third baseman. Charlie Hutton was the shortstop. These are guys that played on the Norfolk Club.
I see. Okay. And then, that was 52, you said, right?
I was in 52.
Okay. Then 53, you went up the scale, so to speak?
No, in 1953. In 52, I went to spring training. After the 52 season, I went to a rookie school down in Lake Wales, Florida, where they had the rookie camp, where they brought some of the outstanding prospects down there to work out. Pardon me. And while I was down there, my dad sent me a telex saying I was drafted into the United States Army. And I went into the Army in 1953 or 1954. Spent 1 year down in Fort Dix, New Jersey, and the other year in Kaiserslautern, Germany. So after the 1953 and 54 service contingent, I then went into professional baseball again, was invited down to another rookie school in 1955. The Yankees decided to keep me over, basically, to pitch with the big club, and I made the club in 55.
Oh, yes, yeah, so you started 55 with the Yanks then, right?
Started in 1955 with the Yankees after going to spring training.
Right, so you came north with the club.
Came north with the club. In those days, one of the reasons that helped me make the club was the fact that guys that came out of the service. They would call that the National Defensive List. So the two guys they carried was Billy Martin and myself, and we didn't count on a roster of other 25, so we really didn't hurt the roster. We made the club at 55.
Okay, here we call your first game.
First game was against the Boston Red Sox, and we won our game 5-2.
Where?
Pitched the game in Yankee Stadium.
Okay, did you start?
Started the game and won about 6 innings.
Okay. Now, your rookie year that you went 8-7, right?
And my rookie year, 1955, I won 8-7, right?
Right, 8-7.
But it was a big year other than winning 8-7, because many things happened to me in my rookie year, not only signing my first Major League contract, becoming a Major League pitcher, having a record of 8-7. I also was initiated into the World Series in 55 by Duke Snyder hitting a home run off me. And also at the end of the season, I was married to my lovely wife.
That's great. Tell me a bit about the 55 Series. Your first entry into the 55 Series.
The first entry into the 55 Series was in a relief basis. And the first time I got to relief, got a couple of men on, and Snyder hit a three-run homer off me.
I see. Correct me if I'm wrong, it's game 3 in Brooklyn?
My memory is good, but not that great.
Okay.
No, I don't remember what game it was.
Okay. It's nice to have a run with you, and you lost that game.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. It's well known that the Yankees would have lost the series to the Dodgers.
Well, we lost it 4-3.
Right.
The Padres won 3 games against us.
Right. Do you recall a great disappointment after the team lost the series?
No, not really. I guess because you got to look at me as the fact that I was a rookie.
Right.
And here I am playing with a club that down the road just won 5 championships in a row before that, I guess.
Right. How about the other players? They were not particularly upset? I mean, I know the Dodgers are rivals. That's what I'm...
No, I think probably... Sure, you're always upset when you win a championship, but I don't think you're going to jump out the window for the fact that that goes 7 games, I believe. And
right. And the Dodgers had great teams.
Good, and they had great teams.
Right.
And, they deserve to win.
Right, okay. The following year, 56, is your year, so to speak. You go 18-9. Tell me about 56, and what, if anything, you think was different in 56 for you personally that allowed you to have the success that you did?
Well, I think probably what happened was I got more opportunities to start. And just to backtrack a little bit, after the 55 season and the World Series, pardon me, the Yankees were invited to go on a good world trip to Japan by the United States government and Pepsi Cola Company.
Okay.
While we went on this trip, I worked on a slider, a different pitch when I was over there in Japan. And I think basically coming back into 56, that slider helped me out a little bit because it was a new pitch. And I perfected it a little bit because I didn't have a great curveball. And the slider was a real good breaking pitch for me. And then what happened was, I remember there was a game in the beginning, I don't know whether it was April or May, where Tommy Byrne got sick and got some type of flu and was put into the hospital, and I had to take his spot to pitch, and I won a game, and I stayed in the starting rotation most of the year.
Okay, and you continued with success. So you think your development of the slider helped you in 56?
Yeah, I think so. I think the development of the slider, getting the opportunity to pitch more, keeping the ball down, and, you know, many, many things enter into having a good year. Being a little lucky.
Well, you had 3 shutouts that year.
Well, I guess if you say that, you know, I don't really...
No, you did.
How many shutouts are there?
Right, you did have 3 shutouts.
Yeah, that was all right. Yeah.
And you pitched 224 innings, so you appeared to have... You had 12 complete games, too, I see. So apparently you were doing well. The 56 series.
Yeah, 56 series was the following way. At the end of the year in 1956, I wasn't really pitching that well. So what he did was he took me out of the starting rotation. And then we got into the series. And I relieved in that series. Got hit a few times in that series in the beginning. And then when we got to the 5th game with Larson pitching, and then the 6th game, Charlie was pitching in Brooklyn. When we went back to Brooklyn after Larson pitched the perfect game, then the seventh game came along, and I didn't really find out I was going to pitch that game until probably an hour before game time in Ebbets Field.
Tell me how you were told that you'd be pitching the game.
Well,
did you have any inkling like you might be starting the game?
Well, I knew one thing, that he didn't know who he was going to start. I knew I had a lot of rest. I knew we had a tired pitching staff. I thought there would be a possibility, but it was a long possibility since he wasn't using me near the end of the year very much.
Right.
That he would go to me on that seventh game, but of course, you find out how you pitch by Frankie Grossetti putting a ball in your shoe in your locker room. If you're the starting pitcher, he put a new white ball in your shoe.
Is that how he did it throughout the season?
All through 5 years of playing with him. Same way all the time.
When you saw the ball in your shoe, were you nervous? Were you happy? How'd
you
feel?
You got a little bit nervous.
But you're ready to go?
Well, yeah, I had a lot of rest, and I felt I was happy that he picked me as a starting pitcher. But of course, you're a little nervous. You don't think you're happy or what. You just get the ball and go out there and give him the best shot you got. And what happened during the course of the game, I got a lot of runs, which helps out any pitcher.
Right. As I understand it, Bill Scowden hit a home run, Elston Howard hit one, and Yogi hit two.
Yeah, Yogi hit two run homers. I think Yogi hit one, and Scowden
hit a grand slam in the seventh.
Right, the score turned out to be 9-0.
And you gave up only three hits.
Well, I gave up three hits, and there's only one strikeout in the game. That strikeout was the last out of the game.
Who was it?
And it was Jackie Robinson. And Jackie Robinson never picked up another major league bat. That was it. That was the last time he ever faced a major league pitcher.
Did you walk anybody in the game?
That's a good question, huh? Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah? Okay. Did you feel like you had great stuff as you were going on? I mean,
I had good stuff. The ball was moving very well, but the ball was sinking. Yogi caught an outstanding game. Difficult park to pitch in, obviously. A very small park compared to Yankee Stadium. But when you have a lot of runs, it takes a lot of the pressure off you.
Right. They can't do anything. They can't take an extra base if they can get on, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. Let me ask you about Don Russell's perfect game. Where were you, in the dugout or
I was in the bullpen, yeah.
In the bullpen?
We knew, basically, that he had a no-hitter going. I don't think we all knew that he had a perfect game going until somebody mentioned in about the sixth inning in the bullpen that he had a perfect game going. Because, you know, these things, you go along and you're looking at it, and not the first time you've seen the guy throw a no-hitter or something for a number of innings before somebody breaks it up.
Right.
And when you're in the bullpen, you're basically away from the action.
Right.
You know, you're looking, you're observing, and a little different than sitting in a dugout where, you know, after every inning he came in and you had a little bit of, the guys coming from the field. But in those days, a lot of guys never said too much about anything when a guy's pitching a no-hitter or a perfect game.
I think it's a jinx.
Excuse me?
I think it's like a jinx.
Yeah, that's the way it was in those days. Nowadays, the announcers announce it, the players announce it, the guys say, you're lucky you're going to get a no-hitter or something. They really don't care.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a change of the times, that's all.
I suppose so. Well, that must have been a big thrill for you, pitching a complete game shutout, three-hitter against the Brooklyn Dodgers. Was there any special feeling, like a feeling of vindication for having lost the previous year? Was there any, special feeling of accomplishment that after losing to the Dodgers, you come back and beat them in 56?
No, I don't think that there was any. You got to understand, the Yankee organization and the Yankee ball club basically felt they were going to win. It wasn't a cockiness. It wasn't anything that you can pinpoint. They just had this knowing feeling that they can win a lot of baseball games. And they went into that series basically thinking that they were going to win it, just like in 1955. So it took an outstanding three-game effort by Padres to make us lose. And then as we went along in 1956 World Series, we felt that we could win it. Just, you know, you look at the pitching with the... You go to Larson's game, and he pitched the perfect game, and he won 2-0. You go to the next game, and Charlie loses 1-0. That's only one run they got. And you look at my game, and I shut him out. They got one run in three games.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, so they didn't really, you know, and they were a good hitting club.
Very good.
Very good hitting club. A lot of power.
That's true.
Yeah, it was.
Really. Okay. So 56, you win the World Championship.
Yeah.
I'm sure you felt like very special then. 57, you come back to spring training.
Yeah, 57, we go back to spring training, and I start the year off as a starting pitcher. Of course, with the Yankee organization, as far as being a starter, if you're doing the job you stay, if you don't, you go in a bullpen. So in 1957, I wasn't doing too good in the beginning, and they put you in the bullpen. And majority of the time I was like a spot starter and a reliever. I think I wound up maybe having a record about 8-8.
It was 8-10, as I said here.
8-10.
Uh-huh.
8-10?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes. 57, played the Milwaukee Braves.
Yes.
Robert Dent was 3 games.
Same thing, that some pitcher has an outstanding pitching career against us.
Right,
an outstanding job, Looper said.
Right,
outstanding.
He appeared in game two, he had in the first inning, apparently. They scored a lot of runs in game two in Milwaukee. He was about Turley.
Uh-huh.
And Doug Burris.
Uh-huh.
Did we throw a record in that game?
No, the only thing I remember, I think one of the years, I don't know whether it's 57 or 58, I had the Asian flu. And that made me stop from being any available for the club.
Okay. 57, seventh game, lose 6-2. Robert Dent, winning pitcher.
Yeah.
Like we said. Disappointing?
Well, once again, as I said, you know, I think it's disappointing that anytime you lose a World Championship, it's disappointing, you know. But in those days, you only had the American League and the National League, you know, had 8 teams in one league and 8 teams in the other. They won the American League Championship now, 1955, you won 1956, and now we're up to 1957, won it again just to get into the World Series. It is a little disappointment when you lose, but once again, I think that went to the seventh game also.
Yeah. What are you saying is they didn't take the losses too hard then?
Well, you took losses, you took them not that hard. You
right.
did not like to lose.
Right.
But you're not going to jump off a bridge.
Right, I understand.
You know, you're a professional, and that was a professional organization, a professional team. So you accepted the fact the other guy did a better job.
Okay. All right, so 58. In fact, the record shows you were 8-8.
Yeah.
But you started only 15 games at show, so
yeah.
Apparently you were used mostly in relief.
Mostly in relief, yeah.
Although I see you picked up 4 saves that year.
Yeah.
Tell me about 58, if you can.
Well, 58, basically, you know, the year went on again, and as far as myself goes with the 8-8 record, I was a reliever, I was a spot starter occasionally, and went along the same way as I went along in 1957 and 58. And once again, you know, I was fortunate enough to pitch on a team that won a pennant again, which would be 4 years in a row, and again against Milwaukee again, where we were down 3 games to 1 and come back and won it 4-3.
You were able to pay the favor back to the Braves.
Sure thing.
You were able to pay the favor back to the Braves.
Yeah, because that was a tough way to pay them back.
Well, you were down 3 games to 1.
3 games to 1, you don't come back and win too many times.
No.
I think the percentages are against you to think you're going to win. But we came back and we were lucky, and guys did an outstanding job and won it 4 games to 3.
Yeah, I see you appeared in game 2.
Uh-huh.
And you appeared also in game 4.
Right.
Although the Yankees got shut out by Ron Spahn, game 4 at Yankee Stadium.
Right.
Right, he started the game. Apparently, it was a big crowd. It was 71,000, from what I see here.
How many?
71,563.
In Milwaukee?
No, Yankee Stadium.
Oh, I'm sorry, Yankee Stadium.
Okay.
I keep thinking of Milwaukee. I played in Milwaukee.
Okay, so now, after 58, world champs again. 59, you started out the season with the Yanks. Shortly into the season,
trade.
You traded.
Yes.
From what I see here, you were traded for
Hector Lopez.
You and Tom Sturdivant, Jerry Mumpy, and were traded for Hector Lopez and Ralph Terry in Kansas City.
Right.
Tell me how you heard about the trade and what you thought at the time.
Yeah, well, all right, we were going along the Yankees and we were in third place, and we all knew that maybe something was going to be happening to shake up the club. And what happened is they called me up at home saying to get over to the stadium early. And normally, got over to the stadium, and the old man was, Casey was in the office, he called me in and said, you have been traded to Kansas City, you, Lumpy and Sturdivant, for Hector Lopez and Ralph Terry. And what happened, my lovely wife was expecting our first child, so that was a little disappointing, being traded all the way out to Kansas City at that particular time. So that's really what happened. We made a lot of trades with Kansas City at that time.
Very disappointed when you were traded?
Oh, yeah, sure.
For several reasons, not least of which was your wife was pregnant?
No, yes. One of the biggest reasons was knowing the fact that being a trader, I have to go to Kansas City, Barbara has to stay home. But disappointing because of the fact this was an organization. They nurtured you through the minor leagues, they brought you up, and you went through the whole system with them, and then you're traded. Yeah, anything for a 20-some-year-old guy to be traded, you know, it's a little disappointing.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, sure. You're going from a first-place club to a last-place club.
Did you talk to Tom Sturdivant and Jerry Humpy? Did you see those guys over here in Kansas City? Did you either of you talk about the trade when you got there, or did you just get on with business and start playing?
I don't think we talked too much about the trade. We just got down there, and we saw a lot of guys that we played with the Yankees before, so we felt like we were home.
Okay.
We felt like we were on a farm club.
Okay. So you go around Kansas City, you go 8-11, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Tell me what you remember about Kansas City.
Well, Kansas City was Harry Griff was the manager. It's a funny thing. I think it was the that year of 59. We had a good winning streak going. We did all right for a while, and then we finally wound up in last place. As far as my year goes, just basically spot starter reliever again, finishing the year 8-8, and that's about it. I can't remember any outstanding achievements at all.
Okay, so finished the year finished 59 with Kansas City. Spring training, you go to spring with them. Kansas City goes to Kansas City spring training. What do you recall about spring training with Kansas City, and was it much different than with the Yankees, and what did you feel about going into that season?
Well, number one, I'm fighting for a job more than when I was fighting with New York, and remembering spring training in 1960. I had pretty outstanding spring, and what happened was instead of starting, which I thought I was going to be a starter, they stuck me in the bullpen to be a long reliever. And that didn't seem to work out too good for me. I had a real lousy year that year, and I don't know what I finished up.
4-10. I see the manager in 60 for Kansas
Bob
City.
Elliott.
Was Bob Elliott. Yeah. Okay.
Bob Elliott was the manager at that time in 1960.
And apparently the A's didn't do too well.
Well, I didn't do too well too much time.
Right. So, not a particularly enjoyable season.
Lousy season, lousy.
How was it like going out to Kansas City and your wife is here? Did you have an apartment in Kansas City? How did it work?
Yeah, what happened was they had a hotel out there that was outside the vicinity of the park out there. I forget the name of the hotel. We had an apartment out there, and Barbara, after the baby was born, came out for a while to spend some time with me.
What was the name of the stadium that the Kansas City A's played in?
Municipal Stadium.
What do you recall about that?
Recall the following. Very, very hot in the summertime, but also a very breezy ballpark where the wind liked to blow out a lot. And balls used to carry, very good. Certain parks balls carried. This is one of the parks that the balls carried very well in Municipal Stadium.
Okay. How did it feel to pitch against the Yankees? Did you pitch against the Yankees?
I pitched against them, and my first time I pitched against them, I beat them 3-1, and that was a nice feeling to beat your club. Yeah.
Was it at Yankee Stadium?
No, it was in Municipal Stadium in Kansas City.
Was it 59 or 60?
That was in 1960.
60, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so 1960 draws to a close. The A's have a bad year, and as you pointed out, you didn't have a particularly good year either. What were your thoughts at the end of 60, and what happened with 1961?
Well, the idea about 1960 ending, I was very happy to go home. what happened in 1961, I went to spring training. They made some changes, Kansas City. Frank Lee became the general manager, and Joe Gordon became the field manager. And they made some changes, and I was one of the changes where I was sent down to Rochester in the International League when spring training broke. And I played for a guy by the name of Clyde King down there.
Collider got involved with the Yankees,
yes,
I recall.
Yes, yep.
He did manage for a period of time.
Yes, he did, yeah. Stayed with Rochester Red Wings in the International League in 1961. In 1962, I was sent to Atlanta, Georgia, with the Atlanta Crackers, and I played with the Atlanta Crackers in 1962 and 1963. And then in 1964, went to spring training with the Atlanta Crackers and hurt my arm. And after I hurt my arm, the St. Louis Cardinals owned the Atlanta Crackers. They made me a roving pitching instructor for for all of 1964 after I hurt my arm. And after I finished 1964, I retired and became a stockbroker in 1965.
Compare the minor leagues that you just named and also your first minor league team. Compare what the minor league life is like to the major league life.
Well, it's going to be a difference because, in fact, number one, in those days, you laugh at the meal money. In the major leagues, you got about $8 a day, and in the minor leagues, you got about $4 a day. The ballparks are much smaller. You travel a lot by bus as much as they possibly can. You do fly in planes or commercial planes. The minor leagues were the minor leagues. They're supposed to not be as great as the big leagues. They give you something to reach for.
Did you play with anybody in either Rochester or Atlanta that was either on the way up or...
I would say that more so with Atlanta with the 2 years I played because it was a Cardinal farm club. So, you know, I played with guys like Mike Shannon and Tim McCarver and Phil Gagliano. Any of the pitchers, none of the pitchers really made it. Bob Sadowski was traded. He went to Milwaukee from Atlanta. Joe Schultz was the manager who eventually did become, I think, the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals for about a year or so.
This was at Atlanta.
This is all at Atlanta,
right.
Yeah.
What about Rochester? Who was the manager?
General Rochester was Clyde King was the manager.
Oh, you said that, right. Okay.
Yeah, Clyde was the manager.
Right.
As far as any guys playing, I played with Luke Easter, big left-handed fella, and anybody else, Valentine, who turned out to be a center fielder for the Baltimore Orioles.
Right.
And who else can I think of that went up and... Oh, Bo Powell played down there, too. Bo played at first base for Rochester.
Okay. Since you were roving pitching instructor for the Cardinals in 64, where did you do? Did you do this in the minor leagues?
No, what I did was I flew out to Oklahoma City, and I scouted the International League, the American Association.
Okay.
American Association, the International League, both had a AAA rating. So they sent me out there and stayed in Oklahoma City and scouted some of the people coming in.
Okay. What made you choose to not do anything such as that any longer and to go into stock brokerage business?
Well, see, when I played with Kansas City, I took a correspondence course with the New York Institute of Finance to get my broker's license. So once I had the broker's license, I knew basically what I was going to do if I ever retired from baseball, and I needed something to fall back on, and that license gave me that opportunity. As far as trying to do anything more in baseball, I felt I didn't want to do that. I felt that it was, I've seen too many guys jumping from club to club as a coach, as a scout, you know, going to winter meetings looking for jobs, and I wanted a little more stable position.
I see. Okay.
How's that sound? Good?
That's good. Okay. So you were completely uninvolved with baseball. You didn't coach in a local area or anything like that?
We formed a league around the metropolitan area called the Atlanta Collegiate Baseball League. What did that mean? It mean that we formed a league to give college ball players maybe an extra 40 games to play in the summertime. We had about four or five teams played. It was backed by the Mets and the Yankees and the commissioner's office. In fact, I think it still exists. It's been going on for a long time. And I managed one of the clubs, Jersey City Club, and I did that for about, I did that for about 4 years. And then I decided I didn't want to do it anymore. I did that on my own time. We played a lot of night games at Roosevelt Stadium in Jersey City, which does not exist anymore.
Yes, I know. Okay. Were you good friends with anybody on either the Yankees or Kansas City?
My roommate was Scourin and Bob Grimm, so I would say that Scourin was a very good friend. Bob Grimm, Sturdivant, Jerry Lumpy, they're all basically good guys.
Those are your closest friends on the team?
Yeah, I would say, usually you found out when you played that, you know, the younger guys stick together, the veterans stick together, different things like that.
Okay, John, I wanted to ask you, there was a famous incident at the Copacabana, I believe it was 1957, what you know about the Copacabana incident?
Well, what I know about it is the following. It started at the Paperly Martin's birthday party, and Barbara and I were invited to go, and basically we went with the premise. We thought there was a lot of people that was going to attend this birthday party, but it turned out to be Whitey and his wife, and Yogi and his wife, and Mantle, and Martin, and
Hank Bauer
was there, and we started off at Danny's Hideaway for a little dinner. We went to the Waldorf to see some entertainment. From the Waldorf, we went over to the Copacabana. We walked in. There were some tables which were occupied by a bowling party. Sammy Davis Jr. was singing on the floor. Bowling party started to get a little bit loud, and recognizing some of the athletes walking through the door made a little bit of a stir and a little bit of commotion.
A commotion
of verbally.
Toward you guys?
Yeah, just basically because of the fact of the popularity of Mantle and Martin. They didn't know who I was. They knew who they were.
Right.
So they saw a recognizable athlete coming in. And then after a while, what happened was a couple of their guys went outside, and a couple of our guys went outside. Not outside, but they had an anti-cove. Like, I can't explain that to you. An anti-cove is an area leading to go outside, but it's still inside, and you would only go by going through two metal doors. And there was a big commotion out there. And when I got out there to look at what the commotion was, I saw this guy laying down. But, you know, everybody said Billy hit him, but Billy wasn't even near the guy. And what we were told later on, that one of the bouncers hit the guy and knocked him down on his back.
Well, it caused a big commotion in the press the following day.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Sure.
But as far as you know, the bouncer hit him, right?
No. What I know is that the bouncer hit him. Nobody else hit him. Billy didn't hit him. Hank didn't hit him. Nobody hit him. Nobody threw a punch. There was a lot of people around back there, and that's what we were told. Don't worry about a thing. The bouncer hit him.
Okay.
Because the guy was causing a disturbance to the Copacabana. So it was the Copacabana employee who hit him.
Okay.
When the guy woke up and he looked up, I guess he saw Bauer or somebody standing over him.
Were you questioned by George Weiss or anybody else after the incident?
We were called into the stadium. We had a meeting and with George Weiss, yes.
Yeah. I assume you told him what you just told me.
We only told the truth and exactly what happened.
Right.
And that's what I'm telling you.
Right. Okay.
Sure.
Was it your impression that George Weiss didn't believe you?
No, I don't think it. No, that wasn't my impression that he didn't believe us. No.
Okay.
No.
It was widely mentioned that Billy Martin was traded shortly after the Copa incident because he felt that Billy did precipitate the fight or was involved in the fight somehow.
Well, I think probably the reason was the fact that I don't think Billy and George Weiss got along during the course of his tenure with the New York Yankees. And as far as any reason why he traded him, I guess that could have made him thinking of doing that. That threw him over the edge and made him do it.
I see. Okay. I also want to ask you, I know, I don't know if it was George Weiss or not, but I know that there was some private detectives assigned to watch Mickey Mantle, Billy Martin, Whitey Ford, and yourself, and I believe it was Tony Kubek and Bobby Richardson. If you could show me what you recall about that.
Well, that was a big joke because they did have detectives following us in Detroit, and for whatever reason that George Weiss wanted to do this, and it turned out to be a joke because they had one on us and Billy, Bobby Shantz and Kubek and Richardson and I went to the YMCA to play ping pong, so they followed us there, and Whitey and Mickey were in the lobby one day when we went down, and a detective was standing there, and Whitey and Mickey said, "Watch what we do," and Detroit Hotel, you had two entrances. What they did was they got in the cab in the one entrance. As they pulled away, the detective followed them in another cab. They went around the corner, pulled up on the other entrance, and walked back into the lobby with the other guy trailing them right behind. So it was a big joke, and that only lasted for a few days when they found out what a joke they were making of it.
Okay. I want to ask you about a couple of people you were teammates of and you were involved with the Yankees, okay? You played for Casey Stengel. I wonder if you can tell me what you recall about Casey.
Well, Casey was basically like a father figure to me because I was a very young guy when I got up there, about 22, 23. Casey was around a long time. Everybody thought he was a double-talking guy, but one thing is I found out that when he wanted you to know something, he didn't know what he was talking about.
He didn't double-talk you then?
No, I don't think so. In any meetings that we had, no, he didn't double-talk. He did an outstanding job. I like Casey. I guess I liked him because he gave me the opportunity to make the ball pop.
The way Casey ran the club, he double-talked for the press mostly. Is that what you heard?
Yeah, he was very good to the press. The press loved him. Always kept him a story.
It's been said that he had a great memory for a lot of things and for strategy and so on. Is your impression that he was a student of the game and knew the game very well?
Sure. I think that he was a good manager, but, you know, I'm a big believer in the manager is only good as the material and his ball players. And I'll tell you one thing, he had some great ball players to pull the strings on.
Okay. Do you think that the team would have won even without Casey? You know, let's say a different manager. I know you only played for...
I wouldn't want to put even think about that. I couldn't think of that club without him for that length of time. I think they did one later on when Ralph Howe took over from Casey.
Right. Do you recall when Casey was fired from the Yankees after the 60 series? Do you recall hearing about it?
Yeah, I heard about it, but... what happened was in 1960... When he was let go and the Mets became, I was down in, was he let go in 60?
Yeah, after the 60 series,
okay, after Mazeroski's. Okay, after the 60 series. And then in 61, when I was at Rochester, he was let go in 60. In 61, I was at Rochester. In 62, the Mets formed their team. And I went to spring training with the Mets in 1962. And I think one of the reasons was because of him. But I was let go at the end of spring training.
Okay,
the club.
So you saw Casey in 62 to
spring training. Yeah, he was the manager of the Mets, yeah.
Okay. Was he the same as he always was?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That type of guy. Yeah, he never changed. Yeah. He did that job for Weiss.
You know,
Weiss was the guy, general manager of the Mets.
Did Casey have any pet peeves about his pitches? Did he get especially upset, say, if you gave up a hit on an 0-2 pitch? Or did he have anything that he wanted you to pay a specific attention to?
No, not really. I'll tell you what, I never really can think of him or remember Casey being the type of guy that would chew you out or anything to that effect. No manager likes a guy to get a base hit in an 0-2 count, but never really, he never chastised us or ripped into us. Jim Turner handled all the pitching.
That's what I was going to ask you. Jim Turner was the pitching coach for your time at the Yankees.
Sure.
Tell me about Jim Turner, and it's been said that Casey relied heavily on Jim Turner.
Oh, Jim was an outstanding pitching coach and an outstanding person. You know, every year that I was there, you basically, everything you do with that club as a pitcher, you went through him. He was the guy like your manager. You know, you never went to Stengel. Any information coming from Stengel would come through Jim, and Jim would be the one telling who was going to start, who was going to be in the bullpen, etc. So Casey relied on him a great deal.
Let me ask you about a couple of your teammates.
How long are we going now? How long are we going to go with the interview here?
Just a little bit more.
Okay.
Okay. Dustin Howard was a rookie when you were. I wonder if you recall about Dustin Howard's rookie. You know, year was the same as yours. Was it significant in any way? Did you see him encounter any problems?
Well, in those times in 1955, you got to realize that L.E.B. and Black, at that time, there were still situations around where he couldn't stay with us. He couldn't stay with us in spring training. He had to go in a certain area in St. Petersburg and couldn't stay with us in Kansas City. He had to go to a different area, to a private family, I believe. He couldn't stay in a hotel. So he didn't have it as difficult as Robinson did, but L.E. had it a little difficult. And L.E. and I came up together in 55.
Right.
He was a rookie and I was a rookie.
Yeah. Okay, a couple of your other teammates, what should we call about them? Don Larson.
Larson, a lot of fun, had an outstanding game, pitching a perfect game in 1956, was also a very quality pitcher, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Enos Slaughter was a teammate of yours for a period of time, right?
Enos Slaughter came over from the Cardinals. The elder statesman of the club, left-handed hitter, good pinch hitter, and a real good hustler, good outfielder. That's what I know about Enos.
Gil McDonald was with the Yankees several years. He was a teammate of yours.
Yeah, right.
I understand he was a favorite of Casey's. What do you recall about Gil?
Mac, outstanding infielder. Could play any position. He played second. He played short. He played third. Good hitter. And that's about all I can know about.
Okay, how about Billy Martin? What are your memories of Billy?
Very feisty competitor. Very big fighter, aggressive ball player who liked to give 100%. He always gave 100%. He always thought Billy was an average hitter, but I think he could have had a lifetime batting average of about 260, 265, which today would be great.
Yes,
compared to the way they talk about his, they hit 230 and 220 as good hitters. He was a good hitter in today's numbers.
Okay, how about Yogi?
Well, you know, what are you going to say about
Yogi? You said you liked pitching to Yogi. You said
he
called a good game.
Number one, he gave you a good target. He kept you going. He made you not give up. Called an outstanding game. Handled you very well. Outstanding hitter, Hall of Fame. What am I going to say about Yogi?
Well, I wanted to ask you, did you pitch to Elston Howard?
Sure.
Elston was a good catcher, too. Did you like pitching to him?
Like to pitch him, yeah. I like to pitch every... Charlie Silvera was another catcher.
Okay.
Getting a sore throat.
Sorry. Okay, got to ask you about Mickey Mantle. Is there anything you want to share about Mickey Mantle?
Well, to me, Mantle probably, a great Hall of Fame center fielder who had great speed, who would have loved to see him play without the bad knees and running the base pass. I think there wasn't a better pitcher to see than Mantle going from first to third base on a base hit and speed that he had. I had the pleasure of playing with him when he had his Triple Crown year in 1956.
Right, dominating season.
So he MVP award, Triple Crown, everything. I thought, to me, you know, outstanding ball player. People try to say to me, who do I think is better, Mantle, Mays, or Snyder? And I can only go by what I see a guy do every day, and he was by far one of the best.
Whitey Ford was one of the greatest pitchers the Yankees ever had.
Yeah, sure.
Tell me what you remember about Whitey, his approach to the game, and what do you recall about him?
Well, as far as Ford was, you know, they only gave him the name of chairman of the board, and probably for me, looking back at my mediocre career playing with such outstanding ball players, I would say, in my estimation, I think that if there was a game to win, and Ford would be the starting pitcher. He's just a great competitor. He never gave up. Had outstanding control. He was a good hitter, good fielder, did everything.
Okay, a couple more guys. Just two more guys.
You're going to go through 50 ball players.
Bob Grimm, rookie of the year, and then hurt his arm.
1954.
Right, then hurt his arm.
In 55, what about
it? Well, he hurt his arm in 55, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, no, Bob never hurt his arm at 55. Just the fact that what happened, Bobby was my roommate for four years, and he didn't really hurt his arm. He started a few games, and then they took him out of the starting rotation.
And he wasn't able to go back to his rookie year, though.
No, he didn't. See, what happens with the Yankees, you'll go along as you're going good, you'll be pitching, but if you're not doing the job, even if starting, they'll move somebody from the pen and put him into the starting rotation. Sometimes what happens is guys get hot and never get back. You know, ask Lou Gehrig with Wally Pipp, or ask Wally Pipp about Lou Gehrig. He never got back.
Right.
All right, now.
Okay.
I gotta take a diet soda.
One more guy is Tony Kubek, because he's a broadcaster today. Did you see him as being incisive and knowledgeable of the game, or was he at the time just appeared to be a player to you?
Tony to me was a great shortstop, and they had a great club when Ian Richardson was the combination second and short. Tony was a very aggressive ball player, liked to win, good hitter, nice guy, very knowledgeable about the game, even though you never realized he was going to become such an outstanding broadcaster as he is today.
Okay, my last question is, again, what is your opinion of the game today?
Yeah, well,
and how much do you follow it?
I follow it very well. I'm a big fan of baseball. So what do I think of the game today? The game has changed a lot in, from the days that we played. We played with 8 teams in the American League, 8 teams in the National League. Today they play 28 teams they have. What does that do to baseball? It waters down the talent a little bit in terms of guys coming up quicker than maybe they should be coming up. And when you do that, you see a lot of guys basically with mediocre careers. Not everybody, but you see guys that do 22, 30 or something to that effect. I also see the change in salaries, which is great. I think they should get all they can get, you know, as long as they don't complain about it. And as far as any other changes go, you know, it's still a game in between the white lines. You still got the 60 feet, 6 inches from the pitching mound. And you have some outstanding talent playing today. I think great talent. I think the popularity of baseball is just as popular as when we played. The only thing that I feel that you miss is the, what am I trying to say to you? The different stadiums and the different characters of the stadiums, like Fenway Park and Yankee Stadium and Crosley Field and Metropolitan Stadium in Kansas City. Now when they build a stadium, made a great change in a one down in Baltimore.
Right.
Kids feel it's a very, very popular stadium, Camden Yards, and it has a little bit of nostalgia to it. It's always nice to have those ballparks like Fenway Park.
Were you a fan of anybody in particular growing up?
Well, I'll tell you what, as far as being a fan, I lived in Jersey City for about 18 years, and in the time that I lived in Jersey City, the Giants had their Jersey City Giants and their AAA Farm Club. And they played in Jersey City, and I was a big Giant fan. I was a big Bobby Thompson fan.